This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2016, held at Faith Builders on August 1 through 5.
So as we think about being a mentor, we're going to have to be an individual that has something to offer, something to give. You know, it's very difficult to endeavor to guide somebody, to direct somebody into a journey or a occupation or a life's calling that we have no estimation of what is this all about. So to be really a mentor, we're going to be able to come alongside. Now, I also want to clarify that also that idea is that What is the job of that mentor? Another term we could use would be that you are a facilitator, because you are now leading, you are guiding that person. Because of what you see in that person, you are endeavoring to just be a co-worker with God. You're not God, but you're helping that person to be able to see something in them that God sees in them, but they don't have any concept that I have that ability or I have that gift within me. Maybe some of you could testify to that of maybe just out of the blue, somebody came to you and said, would you teach school? And your mouth dropped open, you say, me? Teach school? Why do you ask me? Hopefully, they saw something in you. And they didn't just come and ask you because you were the last person that they had on the list that would be a possibility. Maybe you're single and you're available. But hopefully, they saw some gifts, some qualities within you that are reason enough to mine out and to push you into that where they would sense that perhaps God is calling you you too. In Exodus 18, we have the account where Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, comes to meet Moses and the children of Israel as they are traveling towards the promised land. And in that occasion there is where Jethro gives Moses that very wise counsel that you need to seek out some men. You need some help. You need some help to accomplish this this task that is here before you. I'd like just to read a couple of verses here, if I can. I had written down the whole passage, but I'm not going to read the whole passage. Go here. Yes, verse 21, Exodus 18, 21 says, let me back up to verse 20. And thou shalt teach them ordinances and laws, and shalt show them the way wherein they must walk, and the work that they must do. Moreover, thou shalt provide out of all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them to be rulers over thousands, and rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and rulers of tens. And then he goes on and gives a little bit more direction to that. Right? But I like that idea there of what Jethro says to Moses. And he's saying there to teach them, right, to instruct them, and to tell them what you want them to do, what you're expecting of them. And I think we'd always realize that Moses needed some help. Moses was overworked, and he was going to burn out very soon if he's not going to get more help. And I see that as mentoring is that we may not burn out in our classroom, but eventually we will pass off the scene, right? Our time of our sojourn on this earth will be over. And have we prepared, have we guided, have we directed the next generation, those coming on behind us, to pick up the mantle, so to speak, and that they know what to do? And I think probably all of you can be thinking of scenarios in your mind that where you have seen that not happen so well in that way. I'd like just to go to one more passage. That is Psalm 25. And this was a psalm that David had written. And I think it's a prayer that we should have as a mentor, particularly verses 4 and 5 out of Psalm 25, where David says, "Show me thy ways, O Lord. Teach me thy paths. Lead me in thy truth, and teach me, for thou art the God of my salvation. On thee do I wait all the day." So we say we are teachers. Right? So we are giving out information. We're giving out what we have gathered to ourselves through books or study, and we are giving that out. But am I teachable? Here David is saying in these verses, "Show me thy ways." Just recently, a brother said something about these two verses. Say, I'm just borrowing. Someone else opened up this window the other day. But he mentioned about, we don't say about that this is, what is this, God's word, it's truth? No, it's a truth. It's God's truth to us, right? Truth is not in the plural, but God continues to give us knowledge into his truth. So as we continue to mine, as we continue to dig into his truth, we get understanding. We get knowledge of what God wants to share with us. And do I keep that to myself? Am I willing to share? And this morning, am I willing sharing it to a younger individual that I see some value in? Well, I'd like to go here for just a moment. I'm going to draw a box. That's you inside the box. Now, I'm not sure how big your box is. But we enjoy, I think most of us, enjoy being inside our box because it feels very comfortable. We are familiar with the surroundings of that box. Some of us may have very small boxes. Just a little place where we're in. Some of us might have fairly ginormous boxes where we're in. And I was thinking about what influences us? What makes our box? What forms where we feel comfortable in? Well, I thought of, probably our upbringing, like Linford was talking about, our home life. we have influences us in where we are comfortable with. It might be our community. You know, each one of our community, we would say, have different practices, and we feel comfortable in that practice. Say our church life. Probably each church that's represented here does things a little unique. But we're comfortable, we feel relaxed, because we know what's happening, we know what's going to go on, and we're okay inside of that box. For some, it's our job. Some might be school life, and we're right at home in that. I would suggest, as a mentor, that we are now going to be looking and maybe helping people to enlarge what they feel comfortable with. Have any of you had the experience where somebody came and pushed you out of what you felt comfortable in, besides teaching school? Might happen, you know. The mission board needs help. Can you go here, you know? And we get pushed in different areas. And it feels good when it's done in a right way. I always was thinking, too, that on the flip side, what happens when people are not content within here and they break out on themselves? It oftentimes can be destructive when they do those kinds of things. And there's nobody there to help guide them and to direct them. I think probably, you know, in a natural sense, we can think about that. If you have animals and you have a fence around the animals and they break out, you say, "Praise the Lord, I'm glad they got out." No, because it develops work and it develops something that has to happen to get them corralled back in. Also, I thought about an experience with a young man we had in our school, and as we were coming up into his graduation, he was didn't have the best relationship with his dad or his home life, and he was making comments about he's going to go somewhere. He's just ready to get away and to go someplace. And that year, we took to students to a small little place, not very well organized yet. We were helping to do some construction in Mexico. And he was one of those kinds of guys that was kind of impulsive. We were just there for a week. But before we left to come home, he was determined he's coming back there. Without even, you know, consulting mom and dad, without even, you know, thinking through some of the ramifications, you know, he was tired of the box he was in. He was going to get out at all costs. He was going to do that. Well, he got out. And I think he learned a few hard knocks. He has slowly come back into that, you know, rebuilt his relationship with dad. He learned a few lessons as he broke out of the fence. Well, there was one experience in my life where I refused to be pushed out of my box, and that was couple years, I guess. I think it was a couple years after I was married. I loved my job. I enjoyed my job. Don't tell Linford, but I drove truck. And I was just enjoying what I was doing. And one day, I can still remember, clear as mud, that somebody came and tapped me on my shoulder and said, "Would you consider moving to Haiti?" That's the last place, last thing I want to do. And it wasn't all because of my job. There were some other things, and we just talked about it and decided it didn't seem like a fit for us. So we said no. But ironically, I'm going to say maybe a half a dozen years later, my love for my job turned into a distaste for my job. And that's when I started teaching school then. So sometimes, you know, sometimes it's not always the right timing. So sometimes we will move out in that. So to think about how can I help people? As I think about you going into your classroom, working in your church, however that may be, whatever you are involved in, thinking about how you can help young men. Now, there is a risk to it. There is a risk to helping. Because I think of some people, particularly in the school setting, that we endeavor to give them some tools to become a teacher, and you know, they didn't all blossom the same way. Some did excellent. Some did fair. You know, they weren't all in the same, and some it was not really a good fit at all. And they discovered that this isn't really what I'm cut out for. So there is a certain amount of a risk that you're going to be taking as you mentor people. Because it's going to take your time, it's going to take your energy to do that. What do we think of? One example, one New Testament of I'm amazed time and time again of Christ and the motley group of men that he chose to be his disciples. But there, you know, we think about his disciples as he called them. All of those men were in probably a comfortable position. Some of those were fishers. Some of those were tax collectors. They had different occupations. I don't read any place in the scriptures that they were campaigning for the job. That they seen Christ and they came running to him and said, "Christ, I want to be your disciple." But I believe basically, you know, Christ called them and he called them on to him. And then for 3 years, he allowed those men to walk with him. He endeavored to show them. And I don't know if Christ ever almost threw up his hands in frustration and saying, "Why don't I just fire all these and hire some new ones?" I read in my preparation, I won't turn to it, but there in John 21, where after the resurrection, we have the disciples there Christ by the Sea of Galilee, and the disciples are out in the boat, and they come in, and Jesus is asking Peter, "You love me?" And he goes through all that. And then Peter looks over at John and says, "Well, Christ, what about John?" You know, I think God is, or Christ is looking at Peter and saying, "You know, I have this for you. Just take a hold of it and run with it." But Peter in his carnality was looking at John and saying, "Well, what about him? What do you have for him to do?" So this whole idea of mentoring, it's not just going to be, you know, you just tap somebody on the shoulder and say, "Hey, you can do this," and you say a few nice words and let them run with it. You know, it's going to be sweat and tears and hard work to do that. Some of you may be into track and field. Another analogy we could use would be of a relay race where you have a baton. And I couldn't come up with it, but a number of years ago, the U.S. had developed what they call a dream team for their Olympic relay race, and it was supposed to be the best of the best, but they made a big failure because they didn't pass the baton very efficiently. They could run well, but to pass that from one, that little baton on to the next one, they failed. And I'm not even sure they won any of the medals out of that, but they were supposed to be, coming into the Olympics, they were supposed to be the best. And that's where I think sometimes we fail. I'd like to look at just a couple things of why don't we mentor? Why don't we help younger ones? Why don't we do that? I think I have 6 points here of why we will not do that. And I want to encourage you also is that don't wait until you are, say, my age. You can start right now. You might say, well, I don't really know that much. Well, there's probably somebody younger than you that knows less than you and has not walked where you have walked yet, and you see something in them that you say, hey, there's a gift in that person. Is God asking me to help to develop that gift and bringing them to a point? And some of us just need that little extra push, right? Just that extra push to get us to go over. I think maybe Moses struggled with it. One of the reasons we probably don't always mentor very good is, my first one is, we love the attention. Maybe pride. Now, can I give you an assignment? I'll give you my wife's cell phone number, and you call her in 15 years to see how well I am doing. Because within 15 years, I should have retired. I should be pretty much out of teaching school, being involved in any kind of work. I'm telling her now, it's going to be easy. It's going to be simple to do. So let's let the younger guys do it. Think it will be? I'm saying so, but in reality, will it be? Because we love the attention. We love, we're in control. We're the principal. We're the teacher. Look at me. Look what I am accomplishing. And so if we begin to bring somebody else, it may be a problem. We may think, well, we know better than anybody else. We got the answers. We know how to accomplish a job. So do we want to bring somebody in there? Along with that, we may know more than anyone else. Isn't that a good feeling that you're the teacher? You know more than anyone else, right? This is number three. Number two was we do better than anyone else. Okay, we can do better than anyone else. Then number three is we know more than anyone else. I think that's maybe where we all struggle. Give you a little bit of insight. So I think it was 6 years after I decided to teach school. I didn't like my job anymore, so I started teaching school. 6 years after that, our local church needed a minister, and it fell on me. 3 years later, we needed a bishop, and it fell on me. So now I'm the school principal, and I have three churches. So think of all that I know and you don't know. At some point, I'll have to give that up. And I might need to leave somebody like Jeremy begin to know more than what I know. And say, we don't want to do that. We think we do right now when we're in the heat of the battle. But we may not always be. So we will continue to want to have that that point where we know more than anyone else. I was blessed before coming out here. We were in Ohio, and we were at Sunday morning. We went to over to Berlin to the tent meetings that they were having there, and they made an announcement at the end of the service that they have lunch provided for the ministry and the widows of ministers. And I thought that was great that they did that, because you think about it, the widow of a minister has an adjustment, because all of a sudden she's thrust from being kind of in the loop of things to being just this widow. And they included them in that meal. I thought that was kind of neat that they did that there on that Sunday. Okay, so those are things that we need to grapple with. Number four is just the idea of control. Okay, we want to be in control. Now you say, "Well, I don't want to be in control," but yes, we love to be in control. So you're writing these down. So you can ask my wife how I'm doing on these. My number's in the church book, so you can just recently, a minister that had said, told a team that he was on over and over again, you know, when I'm too old to come to ministers' meeting, tell me. Well, here a couple months ago, the bishop went to him and said, "You've done your duty, just stay home." And you know what? He was offended, because it was another prop that was taken out from him. Now, for some of you, that looks like a long way, but you know, at some point, there'll be younger men coming up that will be able to do better than you. Just last night, we were talking about, you know, a couple of us were out there in the bank. The internet is the last piece of technology coming our way, right? Wrong, right? So, for me, I'm a little bit on the upper side of, you know, being real techie. You are all in the middle of that, you know, you're tech savvy and know how to do it. Well, eventually, it's a good possibility there'll be things that you'll say, well, how does this work? And you'll go to your children and say, well, how do I operate this? Okay. So there'll be people that will come behind you, and then you're going to have to think about, well, let's pass on that baton. Don't drop it. Mentor them. Bring them through that. Number five, I think sometimes we lack humility. Okay. Just that humility that to humble ourselves and to realize that we don't know everything. And there are people that are able to do a lot better, more efficient job than us. I talked a little bit about Mexico earlier. One of the things that we thought was ironic as my wife and I, we went to Mexico on a number of occasions, but the way I understand that culture is that if you're working with somebody, you don't teach them what you know, because you feel threatened that person. So as a father, you won't really teach your boys what you know or what trade you have, because you want to protect yourself. And they don't do real well of, you know, passing on and bringing the next generation in to help them learn what they did, what they know. Now, lastly, I have jealousy. And this is maybe I should have put this one first. But it's fairly easy for us to become jealous. Who gets the glory of the whole situation? And that can happen very quickly, that we can become jealous. I think you need to be aware of that. My hunch is that probably a number of you may come from maybe a little bit more smaller communities than Pennsylvania. You're not all from Pennsylvania, hopefully. We are spread out a little bit more now. But if you come from a smaller setting where you have less people, you know, we love the smallness, right? The flip side is when there's an interpersonal relationship, it's a whole lot bigger. Case in point, I inherited a little church. The bishop before me got tired of it, and he left. And I was dropped in there. And it seemed like there was a lot of jealousy. He told the one man there, don't go, you can't come to that church anymore, go to a bigger church. He goes to the bigger church now, and he's only one little voice amongst so many. But in the smaller church, it made some problems. So God bless you if you're in a smaller congregation. You enjoy that closeness. But remember, jealousy can easily rise to the surface. Be careful. Beware of that. And be ready to deal with it. Don't allow, you know, allow others to excel over you, and don't get threatened by them. We can get threatened so easy by other people, particularly those coming behind, those younger ones, you know, those whippersnappers that are still wet behind the ears. You know, what do they know? And we feel threatened by what they can do. My thought is, come beside them and help to guide them so they don't break out of the walls or break out of the fence and self-destruct, but you can guide them into a good path. Well, let me show you a few things about what we do at Pleasant Valley. And this is when we're thinking about pastors, people going into the mission field, and you might say, you guys are stupid. You guys are off the wall. Well, maybe we are, but we do it. We have Donna for a couple of years, have sent a number of people onto the mission field after doing this with them. So on this overhead, it shows you know, some preliminaries about you know, to seek. Well, we don't do that anymore. We don't go through all that. The congregation is well aware of the program. They understand that. Now it says the ministry selects and affirms qualified men or couples. We do that in two different ways. Sometimes couples, young men, will come to us and say, you know, I kind of have this idea of maybe going into the mission field. And sometimes they don't always, you know. Right now we have a couple that we're working through them with this. And we don't know where they're going. Anybody want them? Any mission want them? There's probably a whole list of missions that would say, come. When can you come? How soon? Well, we don't have no plan at this point, but we are working through this at that point. They came, yeah, he came to me and said he would like to do that. Sometimes we will look over our congregation as a ministry and we'll say, well, let's ask this, maybe three or four couples, and maybe out of that we'll get one or two that will say, yes, we'll do it. So sometimes we select, sometimes they will come to us in that. And let me just interject this. Sometimes I have been pleasantly surprised of who was willing. Sometimes it was a people that were willing to go through this that in my foggiest mind, I wouldn't have thought they'd be the one. Or they wouldn't be thinking about that. But God was preparing them through that we could work that through. All right? So that's just kind of the preliminaries. What are some of the things that we do from this? And I should, before I get too far, give at the bottom of your handout, Stanley Fox is part of our ministerial team. He'll be, beginning of September, he'll be back on board again. He's coming home from Haiti. He was gone for 4 years. But he has used something like this, different renditions in Haiti, in pastor training that he has used in Haiti. So it's not all my smarts went into this to bring this to the surface in that. Okay. So how do we train them? How do we mentor these young men? Some of the things we do at attend as a ministry, we usually meet once a month for at a local restaurant for breakfast. Sometimes we meet in one of our homes, but normally we meet on a Saturday morning at the unearthly hour, 6 o'clock in the morning, for breakfast and a meeting. And so we invite them to be part of that. Now, on occasions, they would not be there maybe for the whole thing. If there was something kind of sensitive that would not be well to have broadcast too far. So, and they understand that. We could have that them leave that. Yeah, but we want to bring them in to see how does a ministerial team to wrestle with issues. How they will, you know, that we don't shout, we don't holler, we don't argue, you know, we just, you know, work through the differences that could be there. All right. And some of these, we don't have it going step by step, but it's always this way. Oftentimes, maybe when they have a particular assignment, we'll interject some of these. Like for Sunday morning, we have a little meeting before the service. At this point, the brother that is on board is not meeting with us for our meeting before the morning, Sunday morning. But we allow them to, you know, be part of our planning our Sunday evening services, just trying to interject. And if it looks different in your setting, then do it differently in your setting. Doesn't have to be one size fits all. The rest of those handouts then show a little bit of what we'll go over. And I might touch a little bit on those as we have time. We just give a little bit of teaching. Those men's name are there are some of our ministers. There I'm at letter E. That's my position to pastoral character and conduct and responsibilities. Okay, so we give them some, what we see is some helpful information that would be that. How to work together as a teamwork, requirements of discipleship, dealing with difficult situations, how are you going to communicate? Okay, so we're preparing these people. Now, I will say this also, that not everybody that we've sent out has been commissioned or licensed to be a minister. Some of them have gone to, well, I think of my nephew, he went to Cherry Creek, and he was just as an administrator, was what his position was there. But he still would have went through some of this. So there's a little extra, you know, if we're going to license an individual on the back of your hand out there, I should have there are what we give to, like, for an ordained person, for a questionnaire that they need to fill out. Those that are circled are what we would ask them to fill out before we would license them. So we don't automatically license them. We ask the mission where they're going to, well, what role do you want them to play? And they say, yes, we'd like you to license them as a congregation. Then we would follow through with that and have them fill out that form, discuss it, talk about your beliefs and the importance of what you are going to preach. Here are some different ways that of action of how you can bring them in, and that looks differently. Just here in a couple of weeks, our end of August, we have a couple of street meetings in Ephrata, a local town there. So the last one of this year, the man that is going through the program, he's going to have a little 10-minute sermonette there at that street meeting, implementing or beginning to get him to be up, be in the forefront. And that's how you want to do it. As you mentor a person, you slowly you bring them. You don't just throw them in the pond and tell them to swim, but you help them. And finally, maybe you can just throw them in and they'll do okay. But you want the help to do that. letter number four there of to preach a couple of times. Now, we would only do that if they're licensed. If they're just going as a worker, as an administrator, or a business administration, or whatever the title may be, we wouldn't. Because we just had one from the other congregation that's not necessarily licensed, but we did get him to have one sermon. Because if you've ever been on the mission field, usually, even if you're not necessarily the licensed, the preacher, you have to do a little bit of that. So we did had him just share one Sunday morning, should clarify that. And he was not licensed as a minister. He is in Grenada at this point. But if they have a licensing, then we would try to get them to have a couple messages. There's two things. It gives them practice. And when they get out on the field, they have a couple sermons already in their Bible that they can go with. And as they're getting integrated into the culture, there they just pull this one out. We can fly with this one. So it kind of helps to kill two birds with one stone in that way. Right. So that's kind of the way that that works. I'm not sure if you're interested in this. A little bit about the remuneration that we give of making it possible. It'll be your second on the backside of your first sheet there of what we do for the. Let me find somewhere here. Here we go. We do this as they come back, just to a little gift to them as they would return from the mission field. What we give to them, just to as you know, there's going to be different costs that they have to get reestablished back into America. So you can take that along if you want to show it to somebody. If they want to call me, that's fine. How that works. Number three there says, and most missions do this, would allow them to come home once a year. If they don't, then we would pay for them because we see it necessary for them to come home. One thing that's not on there that we have more recently implemented is that once a year, one of the pastors from the home congregation will visit them and just to check up on them. And the church pays for the husband and the wife's travel expenses to get to the field, just to have that contact with them in that way. Another thing that's been a blessing to individuals that have gone as we've sent them out is number four, we have end of the year offering. Always the last Sunday in December, We lift an offering at our local congregation, and then that gets split up with those that are on the mission field. So it's like a belated Christmas gift to those individuals. And different times that they have thanked us for that because they could use that to maybe buy some tickets to come home. They wanted to come home on a trip, so they were appreciative of that. And another thing I should have put on this also is recently we have ordained a couple of more younger ministers, and we have started to allow them to pick a minister study week to attend, and we will reimburse them a couple hundred dollars for that week that they take off to attend that minister's study week. There's a study week at SMBI. There's different study weeks that ministers can go to. So it's another way that we want to help to mentor now ordained men within the congregation. It's kind of going beyond this, but ordained men within the congregation to develop their task. Sort of like you coming to Teachers Week. Why you come here? Well, there might be some few tidbits of information you can get, or some way just to broaden your base of information, and you go back refreshed, ready to serve. And that's the reason for that. I don't think I'll spend a lot of time with the rest of those things. You can look at that and think about, one of the things that we are well aware of as a team, and nothing that I have done, I don't think. It's only of the Lord. The three teams that I work with, the three churches, we have had wonderful relationships. Not saying that we have always seen eye to eye, but I don't know that I could think of any time that we have left from a meeting upset at each other. So one of the things that we focus on as we prepare a missionary, somebody to go in the mission field, is just those interpersonal relationships. I'm sure you probably, in your young age, have heard of horror stories of missionaries that had to be told to come home from the mission field. They had to end early because it's just the conflict that they had. So in our training, we try to stress the value of communicating, working together as a team. And that's what we want to mentor to them, what we want to show to them as we guide them. And you in your classroom, hopefully you show to your students and somebody that you think would be a good teacher, how does a teacher operate? And not that you're saying, well, don't do like I do, but do as I say. Does that work? They want you to model that. So as a mentor, you need to model them. We also, Brother Stanley does good at this because he's been involved quite extensively in Haiti of just how to relate to nationals and some of the cultural differences and some of those things that you can expect. It's not just that they have funny foods, but they also have different practices in that way. Because there was a weekend, I was talking to a brother that's going with Raymond Burkholder to Nepal here in a couple of weeks, and Raymond Burkholder was telling him just some things you don't do in Nepal because it's culturally wrong. I don't see any of you doing it now, but in Nepal, he told me in Nepal you don't sit that they can see the bottom of your feet. That's culturally wrong. We don't always think about these things as we are. Sometimes we're just thinking about the big picture, looking at the big picture. But as a team, we have tried just to give them some nuts and bolts of how to lead them. But to be able to lead them, we have to mentor that to them. We have to show them. We're about out of time. Anybody have a question that they would like to ask? I hope I didn't bore you too much.
The rest of the handout here is basically just reference material that we can sort through and
idea, like the way we would do it is, a third one there. So one of the ministers would take and talk about these 12 points on a Saturday morning. Okay. And I don't have, we've kind of done it. He probably has some references that he goes to, but you could just take it and, you know, apply it how you want to.
Well, one thing I noticed here in this one page, practical points for positive pastoring, 1D, don't church the Bible with my old church. I'd just like to hear a little more commentary on that. Or...
Do you know Stanley Fox? Oh, you don't know him. Okay. Ask Brother Lyle. Lyle knows. I was reading over that, and I was trying to... he's been gone for 4 years, and I'm trying to think what had he said when he came to that point. But I think his main thrust was that, you know, in that setting, that you are still going to preach the Bible. You're not going to change God's word to fit, say, that they like it, but to stay true to God's word and to teach the truth. So don't make the Bible fit around the ready existing church there, but preach to them God's word. Now, as I know Stanley, that's what his mindset would be. Good questions. You might think of other tools. I brought this along. This is a little, maybe say a little cheat book. This is a minister's manual. So sometimes maybe you go to a wedding or someplace and they have always the same saying. Where'd they come up with this saying? Well, this little book has that all compiled together. Of you go to a funeral and they have a committal. Well, how did they come up with a committal? Well, this book gives some ideas on that. So if you're sending somebody out to the mission field as a licensed minister, this would be a good little book to get from for them. They're not real expensive. It's called a minister's manual. And I think Lamp or Light would probably have them. Somebody would have them. So it's a good little tool, because one of the things we stress with sending our men out is you never know what you'll get into. You know, you're given this assignment. This is what you're supposed to do, but you're going to have to, you know, when you land there, be running, because there's going to be things be thrown at you that are going to be, you say, I didn't know I have to do that. I didn't know I have to have a funeral. I didn't know I'm going to have a wedding. This, that. So that's a good tool to send with them as they would go there. Okay. Well, I think that is pretty much all I have this morning. So thanks for being a good class, and trust it wasn't just a filler time for you. Hopefully you didn't come in here just because you had nothing else to do, but gave you a few tools to put in your toolbox, take back home, apply them where you can. If you show up with your minister and he turns up his nose at it, he may call me. I wouldn't be afraid to tell him our success story, but if it doesn't work for you, that's fine. You're welcome. God bless. Trust you have a tremendous year teaching, or however you're ministering. Trust it'll go well for you. Hopefully Satan will put a little couple bumps in there, keep you alive, keep you in touch with reality. Enjoy.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.